Tuesday, April 7th, 2015, and here are the stories we're covering this week. A sophisticated multi-level cyber thievery campaign is underway, which, at its heart, uses malware to trick users into conducting wire transfers through thieves posing as their bank's technical helpline. Google is blurring the lines and making it so Android apps can now be run on any computer, be it Windows, Mac, Linux, or Chromebook. A Russian coder discovered a way to delete every video from YouTube in a matter of moments. Many of OnLive's patents have been sold to Sony, forcing them to shut down. Mozilla is working to put privacy back in the hands of its users with their new tracking protection feature. And internet service providers in Australia have been ordered to hand over personal information about users who downloaded an illegal copy of a U.S. movie. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
What would you think is a good deal for web hosting? $300?
Maybe.
$400?
I don't know.
$7,000 million gajillion dollars?
I know that's not a good deal.
What if you could get web hosting for only $70?
That
for an entire year.
Sounds actually pretty good.
What if we could throw in a free domain name registration like your own .com?
What
if we gave you unlimited email accounts and unlimited storage space for your website?
Sounds pretty good.
You're supposed to say that's not enough, Robbie. What else can you do for me?
Keep giving me more stuff.
Okay, how about unlimited bandwidth?
More.
How about a 50 gig offline offsite backup service?
This is too good to be true.
What? $70. Go to cat5.tv/dreamhost. That's cat5.tv/dreamhost. And when you're checking out, use the coupon code CAT5TV, and you're going to get all that stuff and more. cat5.tv/dreamhost with the coupon code CAT5TV. Back to the newsroom. Here's Sasha.
I'm Sasha Dermatis, and here are the top stories from the Category5.tv newsroom. Researchers said they've uncovered an active campaign that has already stolen more than $1 million using a combination of malware and social engineering. The Dire Wolf campaign, as it's been dubbed by IBM security researchers, targets businesses that use wire transfers to move large sums of money, even when the transactions are protected with two-factor authentication. The heist starts with a mass emailing that attempts to trick people into installing Dire, a strain of malware that came to light last year. The Dire versions observed by IBM researchers remained undetected by the majority of antivirus products. That's scary. Infected machines then send out mass emails to other people in the victim's address book. Then the malware lies in wait. IBM security intelligence researchers John Kuhn and Lance Mueller explain in their blog post, once the infected victim tries to log into one of the hundreds of bank websites for which the Dire is programmed to monitor, a new screen will appear instead of the corporate banking site. The page will explain the site is experiencing issues and that the victim should call the number provided to get help logging in.
Oh.
As soon as the victim hangs up the phone, the wire transfer is complete. The money starts its journey and bounces from foreign bank to circumvent detection by the bank and law enforcement. The success of the Direwolf campaign underscores the need for improved training so employees can better spot malicious emails and suspicious ruses like the one involving the phone call to the target's banks. This is happening more and more, and it's the scariest thing, especially, I mean, for this, it's large sums of money, but it can happen even with small sums of money. Even my sister's fiance, she's getting married at the end of the summer. He's just finishing up his last year of university, and he got his university is on strike or just finished a strike, and he got an email from his university saying, we're going to give you back some of your tuition money because you've missed many classes. And all we need you to do is let us know where you'd like the money to go and prove that you are who you are. So please give us your social insurance number and your Visa number so we can, refund you. So, Robbie, I mean, we've done a lot about phishing. So what do you think?
Oh, that's got to be an inside job because they got to know who's going to that school. They know the story of the strike. Something's going on there that's a little fishy. Ba-dum-bum.
And then this.
Unless?
No, and then this.
Oh, and then. Oh, yeah. And what you're saying now? Okay, so it's basically malware that gets into your computer. We'll call it a virus. And if I go to my online banking, it says, sorry, this site is down. Please call this technical support phone number for service. How many people fall for it and pick up the phone?
Oh, well, yeah.
And say, so this is a DNS hijacker, I would assume. So when I go to that website, the hijacker then intercepts it and serves up this fake website. Check for secure certificates anytime you're looking at a website, because I would assume that you're not getting the secure certificate when you're looking at that.
So how do you check for a secure certificate?
Well, that would be your browser itself. So when I go to online banking, let's bring one up. Name a bank, any bank here in Canada. TD?
Yeah.
So tdcanadatrust.com. So when I go to tdcanadatrust.com, it redirects and blah, 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 you'll see two things. First thing is that the address then skips over to HTTPS. That stands for secure. It has a lock next to it, and that lock means that it is a secure connection, and it says when I hover over it, verified by VeriSign. Single click on that, and it will tell you a little bit more about this particular certificate.
Oh.
Okay, I'm going to zoom out a little bit here for you. It will tell me a little bit more about the certificate when I click on it, and it says the connection is secure. All right. Now, more information will tell you a lot more information about who owns this. And what, see that? This website does not supply ownership information. So that's just the type of certificate that it is. For some reason, TD doesn't have their name on the certificate. But at least we know that, it is a secure certificate. It is, they're using 128-bit encryption, which is pretty lame, if you ask me, for a bank. A big bank in Canada is using only 128-bit encryption.
Interesting.
Sorry, I my kids' personal websites have 256-bit encryption.
My
Come
mind
on.
Is blown right now. I didn't even know that exists. So if you go to a website that's not secure, it doesn't have the S, does it have like an unlocked locky thing? Or it just has nothing?
I wonder if I have a sample of something that I can show you.
What wouldn't be secure? Like just a general info?
So well, yeah. In general, everybody should be looking to see whether or not that locky thing is there and then
if you're doing anything that's secure that should be protected behind a secure certificate. So if I go, for example, if I skip over to google.com, you'll see it also turns to secure because I'm going to be entering personal information into that. So if I single click on that, it tells me blah, 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 verified by Google Inc. They're making their own certs. That's handy. Oh, this one also doesn't show any owner information. That may be, that may just be that that's what the browser, that's Firefox. And they're also same kind of deal. But so a website that isn't secure, let's say category5.tv. Okay. Notice it did not change to a secure cert.
Right.
Perfect.
And that is because we're not doing any financial transactions or anything like that. But as things change, you can go to, let's say, your website, Sasha, tibby.category5.tv. So try it, buy it. You'll see it did turn to a secure certificate, and it's a little bit different. Right?
I have a very secure site, right?
You do have a very secure site because as the internet evolves and as things evolve, more and more, everything is turning to secure certificate websites so that data cannot be intercepted by, well, it can be intercepted, but it can't be read because it's not plain text, it's encrypted. So it can't be intercepted in a plain text fashion by, I guess, you know, the Snowden thing kind of brought it to light, but NSA, hackers, spies, super spies, super duper spies.
So the way this particular virus works to get around that and the fact that some people might know that is they get you to call technical help, right?
Yeah,
so
intercept it.
Right, yeah.
They stop it so that you don't actually get to tdcanadatrust.com.
Yeah.
So before I get to this website, I've typed in the website address, but instead of getting this website, I get an error message that says the website's down, call this number for support. I call that number. They know enough about me from the virus to be able to make it convincing, and then they take my banking credentials. Oh well, what is your login username and password so that I can test it in our system here? Okay, yeah. And as you're doing that, as you're giving it to them, they're logging in on another computer that is getting them to the site and stealing all your funds.
Scary.
Yeah. You can never be too safe.
Never too safe, folks.
Always look for that little locky thing.
The little locky thing.
All right. Google's convergence of Chrome and Android is taking a big step forward this week. After launching a limited app runtime for Chrome, aka Arc, back in September, Google is expanding its beta project to allow Android apps to run on Windows, OS X, and Linux. It's an early experiment designed primarily for developers, but anyone can now download an APK of an existing Android app and launch it on a Windows or Linux PC, Mac, or Chromebook. There are some limitations. By default, only one app can be loaded at a time, and you have to select landscape or portrait layout and whether you want the app to run in phone or tablet style. Developers will need to optimize their apps for Arc, and some Google Play services are now supported right now, making that process a whole lot easier. So that means any of my apps I could run on my laptop, which is Linux, right?
That'd be cool, eh? And I wonder if the convergence will end up being a drive to, you know, the Chromebooks. And I think about how, you know, now you can run your Android apps on those as well.
Yeah.
That opens up a lot of stuff. Angry Birds, for one.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
No, but what I'm thinking is things like FL Studio Mobile Edition and the ability to, you know, do really cool camera apps and things on other platforms.
True.
And because it's on Google Chrome and you don't need to have Android, you can do all these things on any kind of computer. That doesn't matter what it's running. That could be really good.
That's great news. Here's interesting news. A Russian coder has revealed how he discovered a way to delete any video on YouTube. A demonstration of the technique was posted online, showing that once he had copied a part of the video's web address, he could use it to wipe the clip. Rather than exploit the hack, he instead reported it to Google, who fixed the exploit within hours and gave him a $5,000 reward. While this exploit could have been used to almost instantly purge YouTube of all of its video content, the coder joked that he would have been content just to wipe Justin Bieber's music videos.
Oh, man.
Okay, so I read this story earlier, and the first time I read it, I thought, this is great. The second time I read it through, that's right, I read every news story twice, I thought, $5,000? $5,000 as
come
a
on,
reward
Google,
for saving all of YouTube.
The entire
My
YouTube.
My goodness.
Like, he's holding YouTube hostage,
for
really.
Enough.
Like, I've got this malicious code, but I choose to release it.
Yeah, what are they?
To you. And they say, thank you, here's $5,000. How much money would they have lost in even one day of not being up?
15 minutes. Think about the monetizing videos and how much money and how much business would be lost and how much, like, response from users there would be if YouTube had all its videos deleted. And the cleanup. Oh my goodness.
Imagine.
This is episode number 394 of Category 5 Technology TV. What would it mean to me if I lost 394 episodes of the show?
Right.
Having to upload 394 times 2 gigs per episode.
Yeah, it would cost you more than $5,000 to just
I mean, what is Google thinking?
Redo all of that work. Yeah, a much bigger thank you.
I think the community could come together and do better than that, given this guy, you know, a penny each.
This
just
guy,
to say, hey, thanks. For
this guy deserves a huge reward for knowing that, getting it fixed, and not exploiting it. Although what he said about Justin Bieber is not nice, and Justin Bieber most recently was roasted, so he doesn't need any more not nice things. So, I don't know. I just think that they
could have
done...
Not going to touch it, folks. Not going to go there.
A little bit better.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Video game streaming pioneer OnLive is to shut down after selling several of its patents to Sony. The California-based firm had allowed PC and tablet owners to play console titles, which were run on its computer servers but controlled and viewed in the gamer's home. Sony is expected to use the 140 patents it has acquired to support its own PlayStation Now streaming service. Online was once valued at $1.8 billion, but has not been doing well since 2012 when many of their staff lost their jobs when the company was sold to a venture capital firm after running up about $40 million in debt. While Sony is shutting down OnLive in its current form, cloud gaming is alive and well as Sony works to expand its PlayStation Now service, which debuted last month in the UK, bringing it to more platforms and removing the need to use a gaming console to play your favorite game titles. So I guess this is just one of those cases where, you know, they'll buy it and they'll turn it into something great. Takes money to make money. And when you're $40 million in debt, I guess you have to sell your
patents. Grab those patents while they're hot, eh? And absorb the feature set into your own platform. Makes sense.
Smart move. Yeah. I like it. Mozilla is working on a new feature called Tracking Protection that is helping users identify and block websites that collect personal data despite the fact that the browser has the Do Not Track policy enabled. Browsers have included an incognito feature for years now, and you would think that would be sufficient, but it's not. Some websites still gather information, and that happens even if the user enables the Do Not Track option that are present in most browsers today. In a world concerned very much with privacy, having websites get data from your computer without your consent is a problem, even if it's only cookies or other metadata. Tracking is the collection of a person's browsing data across multiple sites, usually including content. Tracking domains attempt to uniquely identify a person through the use of cookies or other technologies, such as fingerprinting. While Firefox has a Do Not Track feature that tells websites not to monitor your behavior, companies are not required to honor it. Blows my mind. Firefox's tracking protection feature puts the control back in your hands by actively blocking domains and sites that are known to track users. Tracking protection is a very new feature, and it's only available in the nightly builds of the browser, which means it will take a few months until it reaches the stable branch. I didn't realize, like, I just assumed, Robbie, that when you have, like, the incognito on, or that... That's it.
Never make this assumption.
That you're incognito.
Now it's safe to send emails with the president's home address and social insurance number.
It appears that then they can't track you.
No.
Now it's a little bit better?
I think this is where there's a misconception. I think even the president of the United States doesn't quite get that if you have a phone number, you can find the person's name even if it's not on the printout. So if I have your IP address, go to maxmind.com. Blow your mind. Maxmind. That's how we'll remember it, all right?
Catchy little jingle.
Maxmind.com, for example, uses geolocation service. Punch in an IP address. It'll tell you where it is.
I don't like that.
Yeah. But what's crazy about a tracking cookie is, remember we had this discussion, Sasha, a couple weeks back, and you probably remember at home.